Picture your inbox for a second. You are staring at, a completely generic, desperately cheerful business-to-business sales email.
Oh yeah, the classic just bubbling this to the top of your inbox kind of thing.
Exactly. And now, instead of clicking unsubscribe, you just scroll past it. You ignore it.
Right. Which feels like the easiest option.
Yeah, you probably think you are doing nothing, right? Maybe just saving yourself 3 seconds. But behind the scenes, you are actually silently destroying that sender's digital reputation.
It is it's honestly the ultimate invisible punishment in modern marketing. Your silence is actively training an algorithm to treat that company's entire domain like spam.
It's wild. So today we are looking at why everything we think we know about B2B email marketing might be completely backfiring. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
We've got our hands on a really comprehensive April 2026 guide. It's by marketing director Lauren Popek, and it's titled B2B Email Marketing for Lead Generation Without List Burnout.
Yeah, and it's a dense read, but super insightful.
Very. And our mission today is to extract the ultimate blueprint from this source. We want to figure out how to turn email from this generic broadcast megaphone into a surgical precision tool.
Because the goal is to generate actual qualified leads without just, annoying you, our audience,
Yeah.
into oblivion.
Okay, let's unpack this. The baseline established in the text is pretty clear. Most B2B campaigns fail because they just treat email like a volume game. Send 10,000 emails and just pray for 10 replies.
Right, and that volume-first mindset is the absolute fastest route to what the source calls list burnout. But to actually fix this, we have to look closely at the mechanics of how a marketing list breaks down in the first place.
Yeah, because marketers typically assume list fatigue is purely a frequency problem, right? Like, oh, we're just emailing people too often.
Exactly. But the text challenges that head-on. The core issue isn't frequency alone. It's actually a fundamental mismatch between expectation and delivery.
So, meaning what exactly?
Meaning, you are sending messages that have zero operational relevance to the person receiving them.
Oh, right. I kind of imagine it as a cumulative tax. Like, if I expect an industry insight and you send me a generic pitch about synergy, I lose a tiny bit of trust.
Yep. And you do that three times in a row, the recipient starts mentally filtering your name before they even read the subject line.
But I want to circle back to what we mentioned at the start, this concept of passive ignoring. Because when I read the source material, I was genuinely confused. Wait, the text says passive ignoring is actually the most damaging long-term behavior. How can someone doing absolutely nothing be worse than someone actively hitting unsubscribe?
Well, think about domain reputation, like a credit score for your email server. Algorithms at Google, Microsoft, those big providers, they are constantly grading that score based on recipient engagement.
Okay.
So an unsubscribe, while it feels like a rejection to the marketer, is actually clean data. The relationship is severed, you remove them from the list, and your engagement rates stabilize.
That makes sense. It's a clean break.
Right. But passive ignoring, where a recipient sees your email, recognizes the sender, and just lets it rot in their inbox week after week, that is a completely different signal.
So the algorithm basically sees that you are sending thousands of emails into a total void, and nobody cares enough to even open them.
Yes. It tells the email provider that your mail is low-quality clutter. What's fascinating here is the cumulative effect. If a huge percentage of your list is passively ignoring you, the algorithm starts silently throttling your deliverability.
Wow, so your emails literally stop landing in the primary inbox.
Exactly. They get routed to promotional tabs or eventually just straight to the spam folder. You might be celebrating the fact that your list has 20,000 people on it.
But completely unaware that a massive chunk of those people are just dead weight dragging down your sender reputation.
Precisely. It is fundamentally a data discipline issue. Poor governance guarantees poor outcomes. And I mean, no amount of clever copywriting can save an email that the provider actually hides from the recipient.
That completely reframes the entire power dynamic of the inbox. So, since irrelevance is the root cause of this passive ignoring, the direct cure has to be hyper-relevance.
Yeah, it has to be.
And the guide emphasizes that relevance doesn't start with copywriting, it starts with segmentation. And single variable segmentation, like just grouping everyone who works in healthcare into one list, is just a recipe for list burnout.
Oh, absolutely.
I was thinking about that as like a local barista. Single variable segmentation is like a barista who sees me walk in wearing a suit and automatically assumes office worker, give him a black drip coffee.
Right. It is a really broad, lazy assumption that ignores all nuance.
Yeah. But multidimensional segmentation, which the source totally advocates for, is the barista who knows I work in finance, knows I come in specifically at 3 p.m., knows I switch to decaf in the afternoons, and notices I always look at the blueberry scones.
They have a complete multi-layered picture of you.
Exactly.
And that analogy perfectly illustrates the structural control mechanism the source is talking about. The guide outlines 5 distinct layers of data you have to stack together to achieve real high-precision targeting.
5 layers, okay.
Yeah, and if you only use 1 or 2, you risk burning out your list.
So I'm guessing the first layer is just the basic company profile.
Correct, that is the firmographic layer. So company size, industry, revenue band is just your foundation. But layer 2 gets granular. That's role-based segmentation.
Right, so figuring out their actual job.
Yeah. Are you talking to the CFO who signs the check or the daily operator who actually uses the software? Because their pain points are in completely different universes.
Oh, for sure. The CFO cares about budget impact, but the operator just cares about shaving an hour off their daily workflow.
Which means sending the exact same boost your efficiency email to both of them guarantees at least one of them will ignore it.
That makes total sense.
Now, layer 3 moves from who they are to what they are doing. This is a behavioral segmentation.
Like tracking their clicks?
Exactly. What pages on your website are they visiting? Which previous emails did they open? What specific white papers did they actually download?
So the system is watching to see if they, you know, care more about compliance features or reporting features based on their clicks, which leads naturally to layer 4, right?
Yes, lifecycle segmentation. Because once you know what they are looking at, you need to know how close they are to actually buying something. It maps where they are in the buying journey.
So someone who just discovered your brand needs educational content to just understand their own problem.
Right. While someone who has been reading your materials for 6 months is likely in the evaluation stage, they need to see how you stack up against competitors.
And the final layer, intent-based segmentation, that must be the most critical one.
It's huge.
That's the active signal that they are ready to solve the problem right now, like repeatedly checking a pricing page. And the reason I think you, the listener, really need to grasp this 5-layer stack is the psychological payoff.
Oh, the psychological aspect is massive.
Because when you combine firmographic, role, behavior, life cycle, and intent, the recipient feels deeply understood. And the guide explicitly states this fascinating paradox. High precision relevance actually increases a prospect's tolerance for receiving more emails from you.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is that we view email frequency as a nuisance only when the content is useless to us.
Right.
When an email consistently delivers the exact operational insight a professional needs, right at the exact moment they are facing a hurdle, they don't even view it as marketing anymore. They view it as a resource.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because we've isolated exactly who to talk to using these 5 layers, but we have to completely rethink what we are actually saying to them. I was super struck by the source's takedown, the first name fallacy.
Oh, yes. The classic trap.
Marketers love to just slap a first name in the subject line, you know, hey, Sarah, quick question, and they just call it personalization.
But surface level familiarity is not personalization.
Oh.
A busy professional really doesn't care that a marketing automation tool knows their first name.
No, not at all.
They care about whether the sender understands their daily operational constraints. True contextual personalization means altering the actual substance of the message based on those data layers we just discussed.
Give me an example of that.
Well, if I am an IT director at a hospital, I really don't want a fluffy email about the future of cloud computing with my name pasted at the top. I need to know how your specific database solution handles IPA compliance during a server migration.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it explains why the guide argues that generic thought leadership is basically completely ineffective in B2B environments.
It's just way too abstract. Professionals are drowning in tasks. If they open an email, they're looking for a tool or an insight to fix the broken process sitting on their desk right now.
So to deliver that operational value, without just resorting to an aggressive sales pitch in every single email, the source provides a 5-step content progression model.
Right. It's designed to build insight logically over time.
Because I imagine you can't just pitch them on day one. You have to start by actually proving you understand their pain points.
Exactly. Yeah. That is step 1, problem definition. You have to articulate their struggle clearer than they can. Let's use supply chain management as an example.
Okay.
Instead of selling your software, your first email just explores the pain of manual inventory tracking, causing stockouts. Then, Step two is impact clarification. You sort of twist the knife a little.
So you show them the actual cost.
Yes. You show them the math, like how those stockouts are costing them 15 hours a week in emergency logistics and tens of thousands in lost revenue.
Now they care. Now it actually hurts.
Right. So step three is solution framing. You introduce the conceptual fix, not your product yet, but the concept of automated cloud-based barcoding.
Okay. Building a bridge.
Then step four is comparative evaluation. Here, you help them navigate the landscape. Why does cloud-based beat an on-premise legacy system? You're basically giving them the criteria to make a smart decision.
And finally, step five is implementation considerations. Like, how painful is it to actually install this new system and how long until it works? I really love this progression because skipping steps is fatal. Mm-hmm. Like, if you overload a brand new lead with aggressive calls to action, forcing them to book a demo when they barely understand the problem, it just destroys trust.
It really does.
It's kind of the marketing equivalent of a doctor prescribing major surgery before they've even looked at your x-rays. You immediately assume the doctor doesn't care about your specific situation. They just want to bill you for a procedure.
That's a great way to put it. A lack of situational awareness guarantees an opt-out. Each step in that content progression is a deliberate mechanism to deepen engagement. You're testing their readiness to move to the next logical phase of buying rather than just blasting a value proposition on repeat.
So we have the multi-layered audience, we have the five-step progressive message, but sending brilliant content at the wrong time ruins the entire equation.
Timing is everything.
The source insists that frequency must be driven by engagement signals, moving us completely away from the rigid every Tuesday at 10 a.m. marketing calendar.
Because fixed schedules completely ignore recipient behavior. If a prospect is highly engaged, like they downloaded a case study yesterday and visited your pricing page this morning, they can sustain and honestly actually expect more frequent communication. You accelerate the sequence.
But conversely, if someone hasn't opened an email in 3 months, blasting them every Tuesday is just begging for that algorithmic punishment we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
But I have to play devil's advocate here. So if we are letting user behavior dictate when emails go out, where does automation fit in? Because the source explicitly says automation doesn't fix a bad strategy. Isn't letting behavior dictate everything just totally chaotic? Like, I have quarterly pipeline goals to hit. I can't just sit around waiting for people to click things.
Well, it feels chaotic until you build the proper guardrails. Automation doesn't mean abandoning control. It means shifting from a push model to a responsive model. High-value triggers create a predictable flow.
Got it. So triggers are the key.
Yes. A trigger could be a specific pattern of website revisits, a white paper download, or even just the time elapsed since their last interaction.
Yeah.
And the source also notes that modern marketing AI tools are incredibly adept at managing these complex workflows now, adjusting the pacing automatically based on those micro-engagements.
So we've built this beautiful behavior-triggered system. Mm. But what happens if the behavioral data it's relying on is flat-out wrong? Let's talk about the silent killer of automated sequences.
Data.
Rot.
Oh, yeah.
The guide refers to this as data hygiene. And it is the unsexy necessity of all this.
It is the least glamorous part of the job and arguably the most important. B2B databases decay so rapidly. People get promoted, they switch companies, companies get acquired, email structures change.
Constantly.
And if your automation is firing perfectly timed messages to an inbox that no longer exists, you generate a hard bounce.
And if you generate enough hard bounces, the email providers flag you as a spammer because it proves you aren't actually paying attention to your own list.
Deliverability crashes almost instantly when that happens. The source outlines continuous hygiene practices that are just mandatory. You have to aggressively suppress inactive contacts.
Right. Cut them loose?
Yeah. If someone hasn't engaged in 6 months, put them in a dedicated re-engagement sequence. If they still ignore it, gone. You must validate email addresses to catch typos before they enter a campaign.
Yeah.
And you need rigorous deduplication rules so the same executive isn't getting two conflicting emails because they filled out a form twice with slightly different names.
So it's an ongoing discipline, not just a once-a-year spring cleaning event.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so let's look at the ultimate outcome. We have our clean data, our deep segments, our progressive content, and our behavioral triggers. How do we actually know this complex machine is generating real B2B leads and not just vanity numbers?
Ah, the million-dollar question.
Because anyone who has sat in a revenue meeting knows the classic fight. Marketing celebrates generating 1,000 leads, and sales complains that none of those people actually have a budget or decision-making authority.
The guide tackles this directly, calling it the measurement gap. Marketers have historically relied on open rates and click rates to prove their value. But an open rate does not indicate buying intent. It simply indicates that your subject line was mildly interesting or maybe just deceptive enough to get a click.
Right.
Even a click rate can be heavily inflated by junior researchers or bots just poking around a website.
This raises an important question. If opens and clicks are just vanity metrics, what does indicate actual qualification? What are the actual signals a revenue team should be looking for?
You have to look for embedded qualification signals. These are patterns of behavior that indicate active evaluation, not just passive curiosity.
Give me an example of the difference.
So a single download of an overarching industry report is passive. But if a user returns to your pricing page 3 times in 1 week after clicking an email, that is an active intent signal.
Oh, I see.
If they are engaging across multiple different content types, say, reading a technical implementation guide and then watching a case study video, they are dedicating significant time to understanding your specific solution.
So the distinction is depth of interaction, not just volume of interaction, which requires a massive alignment between marketing and sales.
Total alignment.
The source basically warns that if both teams don't share a rigorous mathematical definition of what constitutes a qualified lead based on these exact engagement thresholds, the whole system just generates activity without generating any actual revenue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Marketing needs continuous feedback from sales to know if the behavioral triggers they set up are actually predicting closed deals.
Mm.
Strategic alignment is literally the only way to close that measurement gap.
Right.
That feedback loop is what allows marketing to refine their segmentation layers and adjust the content progression based on reality rather than just theory.
So what does this all mean? If we step back and look at the entire operational blueprint Lauren Popek lays out in this guide, it basically forms a cohesive 6-step execution loop.
Yeah, a full life cycle.
First, it starts with segmenting your audience deeply using firmographic, behavioral, and intent data. Then 2, mapping your content directly to their life cycle stage using that 5-step problem to implementation progression. Next, 3, you trigger those messages based on actual user behavior, not the calendar.
Right.
While doing that, 4, you constantly monitor their engagement to adjust the frequency up or down. 5, you look for patterns to qualify the real leads. And finally, 6, you ruthlessly suppress the inactive contacts to protect your domain reputation.
It completely dismantles the old way of doing things. B2B email marketing is not a volume game. It is a data discipline game. You are protecting the health of your most valuable asset, which is your list, by prioritizing absolute operational relevance.
It is a phenomenal shift in perspective. But before we wrap up, I want to return to that concept of passive ignoring we discussed at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's the concept that usually sticks with people the longest.
It really stuck with me.
Well, I want to leave you, our listener, with this thought to just mull over on your own. Think about the hidden power dynamics the next time you open your inbox.
Okay.
Every single time a company sends you a lazy, unsegmented, generic email, and you passively ignore it rather than unsubscribing, you are secretly training the algorithms.
Wow.
You are teaching your email client to invisibly throttle that sender's digital reputation across the entire globe. We have been conditioned to think that ignoring an email is just a neutral act, you know, that we are just dealing with our own clutter. But in the invisible algorithmic economy of domain reputation, your silence is actually the ultimate form of digital punishment.
That is a wild realization. Next time I look at an overflowing inbox, I am definitely going to see it differently. I wield algorithmic power. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you take these insights and begin to view your own inbox, and more importantly, your own marketing strategy, through this new lens of precision, behavior, and relevance.